This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To me, this year, with what the way Josh Allen played, when you just talk about what it means to be the most valuable player, I don't think there's a player that's more important to their team in all of football than Josh Allen. He affects their win-loss record. The style of play in which they play is all because of Josh Allen. And for me, when the MVP is not only embodies that, but moments. And Josh Allen had a run from like mid-November to mid-December where he was the number one story in the league for like 6 weeks in a row. We went, did you believe what Josh Allen did Sunday and the Sunday night? And oh my gosh, it was one game after another. And Lamar Jackson, as awesome as his year was, hey, his team was really good. He had an all-time running back. He had a better support system. Things were a little easier for him.
Chris Sims on, State of the Bills, their offense, and Josh Allen. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. On a rainy Thursday, I'm prepared to tell you that the weather right now in this exact 10 minutes is the worst it'll be all year. It is 38, and the raindrops that are falling are the size of buckets.
I thought we were praying for this, for the rain to come. We needed it, right? We need this to melt all that snow.
We got to pray for something else. This is terrible. This is as bad as it gets.
You got to go through this, though, to get to, well, I guess, actually, what's on the other side? Is it going to be just more cold? I don't even know.
Yes. Yes. The high today is 39. Sunday, we're back down to 10 degrees as the low. Whoa. Wait a minute. Joe.
Yeah.
Wednesday next week.
Mm-hmm.
The number I see says 56.
Wow. What's the little emoji, though, above it? Or icon?
65% rain.
Whatever. So what you're saying is there's a 35% chance that I am golfing next Wednesday.
I don't think the days in front of this 56 are going to be too conducive to you golfing. Maybe. Anyway, 56. I'll see you on a patio. Like we gotta go somewhere.
Patio first.
Spontaneous party. Everybody hits a button. Every business closes. We all go outside because it's 56.
Yeah.
See if that happens. Anyway, good morning, Jeremy and Joe. It's rainy. It's terrible. Thursdays, I'm from home, and I pop out for a little bit to take the kids to school, try and share the load. And I went outside, and it is bad. One of those ones where you're yelling, get out of the car, get out of the car. I didn't bring an umbrella. I'm constantly unprepared. That's how this goes.
Yeah.
So anyway, the other thing that happened, big happenings around the house today. Thursdays, I'm from home. And the COVID times, we introduced the chaos of being home to the show often, and people would talk about hearing the kids, blah, blah, blah. Today, the dog, the black lab, Goose, was going insane, which is not all that unusual. Barking up a storm, barking. He wouldn't stop to the point where I sent a message to my wife. I said, what's happening up there? And she said, there's a black cat sitting on the porch and he can't handle it. To which I said, you know what? That's not really on him. That's not... You can't get mad at a dog for barking at a cat. That's one of the few things. Hey,
you can't. Yeah, you got to allow that, right?
Yep. An outside cat just sitting on the porch trolling him, and he's just barking at it. Not his fault. Not mad about it.
So. My dog, I know you have mentioned this. When we redid our upstairs about a year ago, we did such a good job with the insulation, I guess, that it's harder to hear. It's so hard to hear what's happening downstairs or at the door or whatever. So now, our dog Finn, middle of the night, doesn't matter what time, he hears the wind, any little sound, and he is he's on alert, he's growling, he's barking, and, it's 2:00 in the morning, your dog is standing on the end of the bed, and he's alert, and he's growling at the door that you can't see. What's your mind go to? Is someone in the house?
Yeah, or is it haunted? You know, or you gotta consider that. Is it, can the dog see spirits?
So I've been living in for like a month or longer now. Once a week, once every other week, our dog just freaking us out for no reason whatsoever. Maybe he's just messing with us at this point.
Good times with dogs. Not a great time to be a dog out there. I mean, well, actually, they might like the mud and all the slop that's out there right now. Anyway, good morning. You can join us at 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550.
Did you see some on Bill's Twitter found the old Shakir takes from the at Sneaky Joe Sports account on Twitter? It took him two days to find them. We found one of them. I almost wanted to make a top five most incredible Shakir takes from 2-3 years ago, but I don't know if I can find five of them.
From you?
From me, at least, but there are from other people, too.
Yeah. Well,
the one they found yesterday was someone asking me about Shakir on May 30th of 2023, and my response was I'd have Shorter making the team over Shakir.
Yeah.
Which, of course, now sounds like the dumbest thing that's ever been said in the world.
Yeah. Okay, you want to go in on Shakir on something here?
Sure.
I found a stat of the day. I actually sent you this stat, so it's going to sound familiar to you.
Yeah.
Stat of the day brought to you by Empire Electric, your residential neighborhood electrician. Visit empireelectricians.com. So, Khalil Shakir is good. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
And valuable to this offense. And we kind of got this brief little conversation about him courtesy of the chat, the YouTube chat, the bullpen. Someone brought up the question, would they have signed Shakir if Kincaid had blossomed the way he was supposed to? And I started really like thinking about that and digging into Shakir and Kincaid and Knox all occupying the same part of the field. And I found a stat that I did send to you, which is Shakir is known as the Yak King because he gets a lot of yards after catch. He is very good after the catch. He's good after the catch no matter where he catches the ball. Like, we've seen him do it down the field.
Sure.
We've seen him do it on screens. But what I want to just contextualize, like, this is the part about where if you think he's Amon-Ra St. Brown, if you think he is
Cooper Kupp or something.
Cooper Kupp, sure. I did a side-by-side of Amon-Ra St. Brown and Khalil Shakir. And if you do a side-by-side of Shakir and almost any receiver, what you're going to find is the depth of target and the yards before catch. We kind of dipped into this yesterday. So here's your stat of the day. Yards before catch is how far did the ball travel in the air before you caught it, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the year, last year, Khalil Shakir's yards before catch, so air yards on completions, for the year was 224. The ball traveled 224 yards in the air on the way to Khalil Shakir. Dawson Knox's number was 217.
That's wild.
That's right? Isn't that nuts?
It's insane.
They threw the ball down the field to Knox more than they did Shakir, and Knox got significantly fewer targets. But comparing him to a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, his air yards was 800 or 700. And again, it's not to say Shakir is not good, but you know, he's being paid as the 20th best receiver. I know that doesn't really matter much either. He is definitely good.
Yeah.
But what they have done is they have unlocked him, Joe. Like, when you wrote that in 2023, they were not using him like this. This is not the...
No.
They found a perfect role for him, a better role for him. I mean, it's a credit to Shakir. It's a credit to Josh Allen and Joe Brady and the design of their offense. But 2 years ago, go ahead and chart Khalil Shakir's career ascension by catches. I mean, it goes, 20, 40, 100, kind of, in that neighborhood?
Yeah, I mean, looking back.
It goes 10, 39, 76, and, you know, $15 million a year contract. Like, that is a quick ascension. There was, May of 2023 was before his 2023 season. He had 10 catches in the NFL at that point.
That's at that point in time. This is where, like, I don't have any regrets on how I analyzed Shakir. It was a fifth-round rookie receiver who played a third of the snaps, had 10 catches. I guess the May tweet is before training camp, but if you remember right, you can go to Sal's Twitter and find this. You can go back on any of the Bills beat guys' stories from that time. He was having a bad training camp by everybody's account in 2023. So, what did you have going into that season? You had a fifth-round pick who had 10 catches, playing a third of the snaps, and then had a bad training camp. Okay. Like, that's where you were with him at some point. And the point about how they used him, I didn't really think about, but his ADOT, his average depth of target, and how it has transitioned from his rookie year, where, again, he was on the field, he just didn't get the ball a lot, to this year. That first year, his average depth of target was 9.8. This year, it was 5.5.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost half this year of what it was that rookie year. Even last year, 2023, it was 8.9. He went 9.8, 8.9, 5.5.
Yeah.
I mean, they found the right way to use him. He grew, I'm sure. He matured in a bunch of different ways. He had some drops, I remember, in the first year and a half that he played. That does not happen with him at all anymore. So I don't think he's comparable to like an Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't think he's comparable to like a Cooper Kupp. Those guys are more versatile. I guess I sometimes have a tough time finding a good comparable for him that is like, you know, it's going to make you think that there's more there for Shakir. But I'm good if there's not more there, right? He's turned into a very good player, and they found the thing that he does really well at.
And credit to them.
Yeah.
But to me, that is a, you know, if you're out here thinking he's one of the best in the league, he is at that job, and that's a very different job than some other receivers have.
Yeah. Do you want actually, I remember finding this as a decent comparable during the season. The guy actually that is used most similarly to Shakir that is a better player, like a guy that kind of is in his role, that runs the similar types of routes, used the same way, but is definitively a better player, like maybe something to strive for. Chris Godwin. Look at all the Godwin numbers.
Yeah.
His average depth of target, his yak. This year, this was Shakir like, right? Godwin this season, 5.7 average depth of target, 350 yards after the catch, 226 yards before the catch, right? That's kind of the year Shakir had. Last year, he was used on the outside. Those numbers look different, but you go back 2 years ago, the years Godwin's been used in the slot have been his better years, and those numbers all look like Shakir in terms of how he was used.
Yep.
That to me is, like, though, like, absolute ceiling, shoot for that, probably not super likely, but if you look at Godwin's career arc, you know, he had 800 yards in his second year, and then bam, there was a 1,300 yard jump. That's the thing you would be hoping is in there in Shakir that I'm not necessarily super confident is there, but that's like the one guy you could look at and say, okay, maybe there is more in there.
Is this what we've seen from Shakir, what we are hoping happens for Dalton Kincaid?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We found out how to use you. Sorry, we didn't really exactly have it right. Now we know exactly how to use you. Now we know all your strengths, and you're going to flourish, because that is what happened for him. I mean, Shakir,
sure.
Shakir's on the team that loses to the Bengals in the playoffs, and they bring Cole Beasley off the street instead of playing Shakir.
Right,
you know,
in the middle of that year.
And if they didn't trust him or whatever it is. So it's been quite a glow up. I mean, and whatever. He's a fun player. His contact balance. Like, I am high on him as a player. But it's for the job he's got, they've really found a really good role for him. And to that point,
he had two for 40. That playoff, 5 for 91. Miami in his rookie year. Miami, he had 3 for 51, and then Cincinnati, he had 2 for 40. Like, those are explosive plays, right? He's averaging 18 yards a reception.
Yeah.
Like, that's a different type of role that he was playing then, and that's why, right, Beasley comes in. So they found it with Shakir with screen game and short stuff, and they even use him out of the backfield sometimes, right, in that orbit stuff that they do. I guess this is part of the puzzle, but can you envision what it looks like them figuring out Kincaid? Like, what does that mean? They figure him out. They just tried using him down the field a lot this year. His rookie year, I guess it was more short stuff, right? And that went better. So is that the answer? Just maybe stop trying to think he's a guy that's going to beat linebackers up the seams. Just throw it to him short.
I don't know. I feel like I drafted him to be up the seam,
but that, like,
I can't be throwing him the ball. I can't all be dump offs to the flat.
When do you deviate from that, though, is a good question, because, like, they drafted James Cook to be a pass catching running back. And eventually, they realized, okay, we're using him as a runner because he can't pass block and he drops the ball all the time. So guess what? He's not our third down back. We might have drafted him to be that, but we got to use him differently now. And Kincaid, you might have drafted him thinking mismatch, big plays down the field, but if it becomes more evident, if they try it again this year especially and it's still not working, those types of plays with him, I mean, eventually you just say what? All right, well, he's really good at being a Zach Ertz-type tight end where he's just running, you know, 7-yard button hooks, then I guess that we're going to just do that.
803-0550 to join us. We've got a call in here. Rob in Connecticut. Hey, Rob, good morning.
Jeremy and Joe, it's been a while. I figured I'd chime in. You know, I listen to you guys every day. As far as the Kincaid thing, hey, give him a third year. Three's a charm. Maybe he'll produce better in the upcoming season. But, Joe, I have a very important question for you. Do you plan on going on vacation soon? Because it always seems like something big happens when you go on vacation. So maybe if you go on vacation,
Garrett,
we'll get Myles Garrett.
Yeah. The moment I leave, you think Garrett's going to be a Bill?
Is the last big thing a vacation for you? What was the last big thing when you missed?
Well, I do remember last year when I was away, they cut everybody.
Okay.
Like, everybody. Remember it was like all within a day or two? Like Poyer, no, was this 2 years ago? Morse. Whenever the day they got rid of Morse and Tre'Davious White.
That's last year.
There is definitely another example, but it's not coming to mind right now.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, go on vacation if you need it.
Go on vacation.
All right. Thanks, Rob. We got to get Myles Garrett. That's one thing about like this offseason. We are still very much in the, you know, you're shaking a box and you can't see inside it yet, so you don't know what their plan is. Not to say that everything always goes to plan, but.
Or what will become available to them.
Right. Like Shakir's the first move. If they re-sign Bernard, okay. Now if they extend Cook, okay. Now we've got a little bit of a clearer picture. You and I today placed a bet what they're more likely to draft, a linebacker or a running back.
Yeah.
And contracts for those two guys might change that. Mac Hollins coming back, that adds to the picture. Yesterday, Chris Trapasso mocked the Bills' Matthew Golden in the first round, wide receiver out of Texas, which would make sense to me.
Is he the one with the injury background?
I think it's Isaiah Bond.
That's Isaiah Bond. Okay.
Had more injuries. It might be Golden. I think they actually both have injury issues.
Okay.
But Matthew Golden's the guy that they mocked in the first round of him. Daniel Jeremiah was on with One Bills Live and raved about him. Matthew Golden is a speed guy. And, you know, like, whatever. We've done the receiver train for 100 years now. I had a thought and kind of pieced it together. If you will, go back in time to the Baltimore game and the Houston game and the way you felt about the weapons that Allen had at that time. Okay, everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Go back in time. This is pre-Cooper trade.
Yep.
The Bills are currently the same team. Cooper's not on the team. Coleman is let's see what he can turn into.
Yeah.
Shakir's here and he's good. Kincaid is here and he's on the team and knocks. And Cook has shown some explosiveness and maybe Cook's the difference. But right now, they are that team, except they don't even have Mac Hollins. So
right.
They have Samuel, and you don't know what to think about Samuel. It's a lot of what-ifs. And I just remember losing that Baltimore and then Houston. Right at that moment, it was a freak-out, like, holy cow, you've got to fix this immediately. So I have full faith they're going to do something. I don't know if it'll be Cooper or what it'll be, but that kind of, whatever, it jarred me to think about what it was like after the Houston game, and that is where they are at a position group right now. Is this the same group?
Isn't it interesting that the whole season it felt like everybody eats went as well as it possibly could have, and the season ends, and you even got this from Bean and McDermott, I think, to for different individuals. The season ends with everybody eats being a success, right? And then the season ends. And, all right, let's start getting into how it went for Dalton Kincaid. And it's, well, he's got to be stronger. We're going to need more out of him. That's the message from the coach and the general manager. And then, okay, Keon Coleman, how'd it go? Didn't respond from the injury the way we wanted. We're going to need more out of him. All right. How'd it go for Curtis Samuel? Injury stuff all year long, right? Like, we're going to want more out of him. Like, is there another example of that? Cooper. Cooper. Bean talking about Cooper. Like, well, he did impact our offense, so yeah, he didn't put up the stats that you might have hoped, but guys, remember, he came in halfway through the year, and then he picked up the wrist injury. So here's why Cooper didn't work out the way we thought it did. Four guys that they all had a pretty good investment into. I've got the organization sounding like, and I'm not criticizing them for it. I think they're absolutely correct. The organization kind of sounds like as the season ends, yeah, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. Yeah, it didn't really go the way we wanted it to. No? Is that not fair? Like, that they would, it's almost kind of like they're saying, sure, it worked, but we kind of thought it could have been better. Because any of these four guys doing what we thought they could do would be better, right? Like, maybe they didn't. This is where I kind of get to Mac Hollins and, like, how much would they want him back? How much do they want his role to be more so than if they want him back? Would the Bills in an honest moment tell you they were really happy with Mac Hollins being on the field as much as he was and getting 50 targets on the season? Because all this talk of plans and whatnot, like, step after step after step, they signed Mac Hollins first, right? He was the first guy they signed before all of them. They signed Samuel after that. They drafted Coleman after that. They traded for Cooper right after he led the team in targets in that Houston game. I like Mac Hollins a lot, but the Bills repeatedly told you with their actions and with their words that he's a nice guy to have, but they want somebody else on the offense playing in his spot than him.
We'll see what the number is for him signing and if he does come back, which I would anticipate that he does.
Not for $6 million or whatever over the
cap. No, 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 no. Not a spot track takes its value, no. 803-0550-1888-552-550. Oregon defensive tackle Jamari Caldwell met with the Bills.
Did you see the...
Kenneth Grant.
There was it from Mary Kay Cabot this morning talking about how Browns GM Andrew Berry is willing to pay Myles Garrett $40 million a year.
Okay. You know, whatever, the Browns don't have to trade Garrett. Doesn't Berry come across a little bit as overdoing it?
Sure.
He was asked
that go back even to the Cleveland to Canton thing?
Cleveland to Canton, just the idea, he was asked about, you know, imagining a situation, a scenario for Garrett. He's like, I don't want to do that. It's not realistic because I don't want to trade him. Like, okay. He could just be telling the truth, but it's laying it on pretty thick. Then I guess he might have to. Former Georgia safety Malachi Starks met with the Bills last night.
Okay.
Safety is definitely in the mix, in my opinion, as they, you know, remake this defense. Although Malachi Starks, I don't know that he'll last that long. There was a time he was looked to be a very, very high pick. So, anyway, mock draft season.
You know what Andrew Berry really needs? I had this idea that if Andrew Berry really is desperate to keep Myles Garrett, isn't Garrett telling you it's not all about the money? Like, you probably have to give him that anyway.
Yeah, he's said
but
that.
But you got to sell to him that you're going to win this year, I think. And I don't know that he'd play for you, but if I mentioned this on the air, the idea of offering the Rams the reverse of the Goff trade, offering them, hey, we're going to give you a ton of capital here for two things. One, we want Stafford, and two, we want you to take our anchor of a quarterback contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way out of getting out of Watson. You're going to take the Watson contract off our books, and we're going to take Stafford off your hands, and we're going to make it worth your while. What's worth your while? I mean, for Detroit, it was two first-round picks, right? For the Rams, is it the third overall pick? How much value does taking on a $70 million quarterback, you know, off a team's books take? Like, it might be a ton. And that would give the Browns a quarterback that could sell the Myles Garrett. Like, all right, we're doing it. We're gonna go win. Let's go do it. We got a roster to win. We got a good line. We got a good receiver, good tight end, good defense. Like, let's go win right now.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe. On a Thursday, rainy Thursday, Sabres and Canes tonight. Operation 10 straight continues. Let's try and get back in this playoff race. They haven't won in Carolina since 2016.
How many times have they won there at all since the day that doesn't need to be spoken?
Game 5. or Game 7? Which one doesn't need to be spoken? They lost Game 5.
Both.
Game 5, they had a lead. Game 5, they had a two-goal lead.
Game 7, they had a lead going into the third, didn't they?
Yeah, but they
Hash scored from behind
that.
The net.
He did.
Well, they still, whatever. They still had it. They still
That's
had
true.
The lead.
That's true.
Don't tell me he was lucky. That's the goal Hesh was known for. Maybe they were lucky. Were they getting dominated in that game? I don't know. I've never gone back and watched.
I mean, Carolina's first goal in Game 7 was very lucky. It bounced off of the skate of... boy.
Doug Janik?
Maybe.
Well, he scored. Doug Janik scored.
Okay. Maybe it was off Fitzpatrick.
Jeff Gilson.
Maybe it was off of Mayer. If you go... We've Jeff done this Gilson. Before, Joe. If you go watch goal number one of the Game 7 final, you'll get mad.
Yeah, I'll never
It's the dumbest goal you'll ever see. It's just, you know, 1-0 Canes in Game 7. It's obnoxious. I'm going to go do it right now.
The only clip I've ever seen back from that game is the Hesh behind the net goal, and that's only because it was featured in the Sabres, like, Better Days DVD from 2007. Yeah. I've never gone back and watched the highlights of that game. I don't think I ever will.
All right, we're going to break in 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 on WGR.
The biggest thing that has struck me is that it continues to be someone else's problem. Like, take us back to locker cleanout day. First, it was the knee tendonitis. And then to start this season... it was JT Miller. And then when JT Miller is not there, he gets back to performing at a level that he should. Then JT Miller is gone, and all of a sudden the question is his line mates. Does he have enough talent around him? Is he being deployed appropriately? And then finally, after we don't see a different Pettersson, all of a sudden now it's the media's fault. And I think the biggest question left to answer is, when is Elias Pettersson going to take any accountability for his own game?
Frank Saravalli. Daily Faceoff.
And that is what it has sounded like about Pettersson for like a week or more now from the Vancouver people and the insiders. Like, he's kind of getting crushed.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Sabre fans are now hearing that or reading about him and thinking, like, or being turned off to the idea a bit. Just on all of that. I don't even know how true all of that is. Like, is he actually blaming the media, or is he just saying that the media is annoying and he probably shouldn't have said it? But it seems like a guy right now that is just completely lost in the wilderness, and, you know, you're kind of maybe taking a risk on a personality more than anything if you were to acquire him and spend a ton to get him. It's also why he would be available, though.
Right.
Because that baggage is the only reason you could even get him.
Don't you think a good chunk of Sabres fans don't even bother entertaining the idea of a trade because they don't think the team will make one?
That is definitely a sizable chunk, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just wouldn't even think about it. You know, I think they'll do something.
They will have to. I also think, like, this offseason somebody from the core gets moved. I do think that'll happen.
Cousins?
Maybe.
Doesn't it have to be Cousins? Because Cousins is the only one that you can realistically think has any value that doesn't sound as crazy as... like, you're not trading Dahlin or Tage. And then yep. Who else in your core really carries a lot of weight? Like, it just feels like there's enough noise to think he would be the one.
Operation 10 straight. Here's the update. So Ottawa lost, right? That's good.
Yep.
The final playoff spot is currently held by the Columbus Blue Jackets. Here's the thing about chasing. It's like chasing a cut line in golf. Yes, it moves around a lot. But if you birdie in, you'll probably be close to it because the teams that are here are not that good either. I mean, they're better than you. Right now, Columbus is on pace for, through 64 games, to have 70 points. If the Sabres win their next eight, I know. Then they would have 69 and be 1 point back.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the math. Some are doing a magic number like they have 26 games remaining. They probably have to win 19 of them. Mm-hmm. All right. You want to do it that way? That's fine, too. I'm doing Operation 10 straight. If they lose tonight, guess what? Start a 10-game streak tomorrow because the number will be slightly different but about the same. But they kind of have to win They're going to be about 13 games over 500 is really what they have to do. And over actual 500, not like the overtime loss 500.
Yep.
All right. So.
Are they good?
Who?
The Sabres.
No.
Like, do we care? Do we care about these indicators like the fact
are they better? Are they improved?
That they have the third most goals in the NHL this year at 5-on-5. Like, do we? Special team stinks. Like, there's no. I don't think there's any question about that. Their special team stinks. Do we care that they're amazing in the first period, best team in the league? Like, do we care that they're great at 5-on-5? Like, there are these. Do we care that when Dahlin is healthy, especially, that they are, they're a far better team? Like, there are these indicators, these small indicators that are kind of mixed in that kind of say, like, you might not, you're definitely not as bad as where you are in the standings, but maybe you're even closer to good than you are to terrible. You just got some things to figure out.
Yep.
But that's,
well,
that's different. There are years where they have a hot power play, or they have a great penalty kill, or they get great goaltending, but there's just no debate. The team stinks. Like, the team gets run over at even strength all the time. And that really is the one category I really want to kind of key in on, is like, if they're good at even strength, then I kind of want to believe that. How far do I want to go with it? That they're going to figure it out.
The answer to your question, do you care about the things they are good at, is picture it's locker cleanout day and Kevin Adams is talking about those things as reasons why they're good. Do you care about it? You might say he's
I might care about it if it was a different GM that was
saying. Just like, I'm not saying he's wrong, but I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear these victory laps over things that, you know, have you finishing in 27th place.
Right.
So anyway, 803-0550, our phone number, 1-888-550-2550. Did you see Warren Sharp had some interesting stats, NFL note here. Do you know the team that would benefit the most if the tush push was banned?
That would benefit the most?
Yes, there's one team that would benefit the most. He did some numbers on fourth downs in the NFL last year. And we already did our stat of the day, so I can give you this, which is kind of part of that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Who?
So everybody knows quarterback sneaks are very efficient. Anybody who wants to eliminate the tush push is still allowing you to do the quarterback sneak, to still do the thing where the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman push each other and no one's getting called soft. Like, it's still a play. It's just you can't push the quarterback from behind. Anyway, he points out that quarterback sneaks are very effective. 70 quarterback sneaks last year in the NFL on fourth and short converted at a 90% rate.
Mm-hmm.
So 90% of quarterback sneaks convert. The Commanders, the Washington Commanders, converted 87% of their fourth and shorts and never ran a single quarterback sneak.
Wow.
So they don't even need the tush push.
No.
If you're the Commanders, you wish you could vote 10 times. Take it away from the Eagles. We don't even need it.
Right.
87% on fourth and short and did not quarterback sneak a single time.
Yeah. That, especially if your division rival that you play twice a year is the one that is running the same play. Because that, both those teams go for a lot of fourth downs, right? So, like, you would be taking away your biggest threat, your biggest contender, your biggest division rival right now going forwards, number one play by far in those situations, and you would still have all of yours. That would be huge for them, I think.
Yeah. 803-0550. Let's get some calls in. We got a couple to catch up on. Let's go to Winton in Buffalo. Winton, good morning.
Hey, guys. Just to chime in on the Kincaid a little bit. McDermott kind of complained about his strength and his power, but, you know, he was never really good at blocking to begin with coming out of college. That was his knock getting drafted. But he's supposed to have, you know, great hands, but even his hands have been a little shaky at times. And even with Coleman, he was never really a separating speed guy, and it kind of showed this year. So maybe we're starting to get a little bit too cute in draft, and I would just like to hear your opinion on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
all guys at that stage in the first round are going to have deficiencies, right? It's
most
just kind
of. I mean, Brian Thomas Jr. doesn't appear to have too many. And
right.
Ladd McConkey had a great rookie season. I was watching some and reading some on him.
But what's his deficiency? His deficiency is he can't really play on the outside, right?
Sure. I mean, I'm not even sure that that is his deficiency. I mean, everybody's got one. Xavier Worthy had a deficiency. He's not that big. He's not ever going to run block for you.
Right.
Right? So, you're right. You're not going for perfect players. You're going for guys that fit roles. And for Kincaid and for Coleman, they've got roles to fill. It is a little bit of the Bills' offense. They are constantly trying to, when they draft a player, say a player can do more than they have done. And sometimes they're right. I mean, Dawson Knox did not catch a touchdown in college, and they turned him into a pretty good tight end. So sometimes they're right.
Right.
But if you think back to Kincaid, he's a matchup nightmare. You know, think of him like a receiver. Well, that's not really true. When they drafted Shakir, they needed help on the outside. Oh, we think he can go on the outside. Like, it's really not true. Coleman is – here's another part about Coleman that's interesting. Many people thought Coleman would be good in the NFL and would be best used where?
Slot.
Slot. They've got so many guys that can roll in there. And I think Coleman did start to see a little bit of slot deployment late in the season. A little bit.
I mean, look on that. Because you already have Shakir, Kincaid, and right. Samuel, if you want to, play there a lot.
So it's just interesting. The Bills, they like the guys they like. And for whatever reason, they've not committed a big asset to a burner. Maybe this is the year.
Yeah, you're right. But if you look at... Coleman played 75 snaps in the slot total this season. And before he got injured, that was only like 20 of them. So like 55 of his 75 were weeks 15 on. Mm-hmm. But again, that number is minuscule, 75 snaps in the slot on the year compared to 633. On the outside. Like, they really did not... They did not think that it was going to be a part of his game. Or at least just that it didn't fit the offense. And that was always my biggest question with, like, Kincaid, if you want to tell me his deficiencies, he doesn't block and he's not big enough, like, all right, like, I could still listen to, though, matchup nightmare. Like, if he's good at the stuff he's supposed to be good at, then I shouldn't really care about all that other stuff.
Yeah, the
stuff
true
that
matchup...
Go ahead.
But the true matchup nightmares are at tight end are the guys that do both. That you really, when they're on the field, you are afraid they're going to blast you and they're going to block. That's the true matchup nightmare tight end.
But then with Coleman, even, I guess, in addition then, with Coleman, my problem more so with him is the things that were questions about him, speed and separation, are just, like, they're non-starters for me. Like, if you can't do that, then you better be the best contested catch guy in the league. And he was one of the worst. By efficiency, he was one of the worst.
I don't think the separation issue has to be a death sentence. There are guys that do succeed without separating. He can be one of those guys. I think it's obviously key to know you shouldn't really ever expect it from him. I think he can succeed despite having that problem, but... You know, I don't think it's someone you can really grow into becoming.
Well, then he's going to have to catch more than 23% of his contested balls. Like, that's it. Right. That might be all. And is that what they're talking about when they say aggressiveness and, like, you know, going after, you know, those types of plays? That might be all that they're really talking about when they're talking about. They weren't talking about Coleman in these press conferences having to go to work this offseason and figuring out how to run routes. Like, that wasn't the messaging.
803-0550 to join us, Jeremy and Joe. Big game tonight, Sabres and Canes. We're calling it a big game. You can't stop us. We're doing it. And it's the Canes. Maybe you can, you know, work up a little lather, a little hatred. Call back on the old...
Just show the 06 banner and a picture-in-picture in the corner of the screen the whole time just to get Sabre fans fired up.
Watching 06 highlights does include, though, getting OLN on the broadcast. Don't forget that.
Yes.
OLN, the Outdoor Life Network.
What a time to be alive.
What a life we have lived here. What a life. All right, we'll wrap the show and pass it off to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show coming up next.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
All right, Joe, from the Combine, we're seeing a lot of safeties now, and the Bills are meeting with all of the safeties.
All right.
Fine. I think safety is definitely on the board here. Definitely. First round, second round, yeah. Third round, I think safety is absolutely on the board. We got all the positions. It's every position on defense and wide receiver. That's the draft.
I'm still not there in line. They're meeting with safeties and linebackers, but I'm still just not. I don't see it.
What else?
Brian Fisher of Locked On Red Wings just tweeted out, games to pay attention to in the wild card race if you're a Red Wings fan.
Here we go.
And then who you're rooting for. Blue Jackets and Red Wings, obviously. Sharks and Canadiens, you're rooting for the Sharks if you're a Red Wings fan. Flames and Lightning, rooting for Calgary. And then Flyers and Penguins.
Excuse me, sir.
So new name. Instead of Operation 10 Straight, I think this is Operation Other Teams Media paying attention to your games.
He obviously doesn't know about Operation 10 Straight.
No. He'll learn soon enough, we hope.
He's going to learn soon enough once they get to like 7, if they get to 7. All right. We're back tomorrow for Combine Friday, I guess. Stay tuned. More updates from the Combine. The Bills meeting with all of the defensive linemen, all of the safeties, it would appear. And more on-field stuff begins today. Workouts, 40s, all that good stuff. Jeremy and Joe saying, talk to you tomorrow. The Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show is up next.